Welcome to This Week in Heresy, Episode 4, Inclusion and the Emerging Church, with this week's in-studio guest, Reverend Lee Whitaker. Hi, Lee. Welcome to This Week in Heresy.
Hey, Gina. How's it going?
Good, good. So today we're going to be talking about the emerging church, and you know, we're both kind of on the forefront of that and doing, I'm creating a new, brand new church. And you're going to be creating a church, but you're also going to be working with a denomination. So what do you think is the state of the emerging church right now?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that the emerging church is just beginning to dawn on a lot of people. I think it's something that's just starting to be really talked about within congregations. As a way of revisioning, a way of how can we do church differently? How do we open ourselves up more to bring in more people to the table? So I think that it's still pretty much in its infancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think so too. And, you know, I've seen a lot of different types of emerging church. I mean, I've seen everything from pub churches to coffee house churches. You know, and, you know, people seem to try and bring a lot of modernity into the church environment. But I'm wondering, you know, is that, you know, they're trying to be inclusive, but is that leaving people who like the traditional church behind?
Well, there's two things there. I think we have to be careful that we don't use the word emergent church necessarily as a buzzword. Because when that happens, we tend to come up with a generic definition of what that means. And so people will say that that's what that church is, whatever that definition is. When it seems to be a lot of individuality, a lot of individual types of churches that are happening, right. Which I think is really good.
Right.
And in regards to the other types of churches, you know, pub churches, coffee house churches, whatever, there's a church that's been going on for years down at on Long Beach, New York, and in Jones Beach, New York, where they have a church every Sunday morning on the beach.
That's cool.
And a lot of people go to it.
Well, there's one in San Francisco, too, Open Cathedral, which is done right in the middle of the UN Plaza. Mm-hmm. Well, not in the middle of, but close to it. And, you know, and basically that ministry is to the homeless in that plaza.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's really what, as we talk about emergent churches with people, that we need to bring that open, that that's what we're trying to do, is to have more people come in, have the God be more accessible to people.
So one of the other things that I've been thinking about lately is, you know, with the emergent church coming through and, you know, smaller groups of people doing various forms of some sort of spiritual church-like thing, you know, is it really necessary for butts to be in the seats? I mean, can you, because, you know, Christianity is seeing a real decline. So there must be something that there's, you know, that people are trying to innovate and do all these things like let people Twitter and, you know, have projectors and stuff. But the church, the Christianity specifically, is still in decline. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're still doing something that's not bringing people in.
Right. Well, there's two issues that you're talking about here. I think if we focus solely on how we're going to bring people into the church, we're missing the mark. Mm-hmm. I think it's how we can feed people better.
Right.
Feed people spiritually within our congregations, and how do we feed people out into the greater community outside of our church? Right. And I think if we can start doing that sort of work, people are just going to organically start coming back into church. Right. I think people really, I think there's people really needing connection, real, you know, meeting face to face, mono to mono, you know, connection.
Well, people really want community.
Yes. But the thing is, some people have forgotten how to be in community.
Well, yeah.
And I think that's a big problem with a lot of churches is that there's a proprietorship in some churches. Well, this is the way we do it.
Right.
So they're like white knuckling it to their tradition, which is no longer working.
Right.
So I think about how we can do work. For example, this is probably an ideal time for the emergent church because churches are broke.
Right.
So how can we work together as a community, as a Christian community, a community of churches to do the work of God?
Yeah. And that would be really ideal. I mean, I know, you know, where I'm holding services at Between the Worlds, you know, they're very much about helping people in the community start things. And, you know, I thank my lucky stars that I'm doing Between the Worlds where I am. You know, but not every church is doing that. In fact, there's another venue that, you know, there's some discussion about, you know, having me there. And not that that's a bad thing. It's actually been a really good thing for the church and for me and for, you know, and for everybody involved. But, you know, I think it's another case, like I was talking with about Jay last week, is that, you know, what do you mean when you say you're a welcoming congregation? What do you mean by that? You know, and I think some of the decline is that that's not clear and people are staying away because most of Christianity these days is seen as homophobic, transphobic, et cetera, et cetera.
You're right.
Anti-women,
anti-homeless, you know, as long as they stay outside, that's fine. Well, as long as they're not on our church property, as some churches have.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really true, and I hear that a lot, and I think this sort of revisioning work, like the church that you were talking about, is so vitally important to have because it's really what it's look at where we're at, what are we doing, what could we be doing differently.
Or better.
What's not working?
Right.
Because not everything floats everybody's boat, you know? So I think that that's an important conversation. Now, when we come to the conversation of welcoming, that's a whole different conversation. And I think that involves a lot more intentional, detailed conversation, especially if we start talking about the queer community. Let's go down each letter, you know, lesbian, gay men, bisexual people. Well, what does it mean? What is it to you if somebody says that they're bisexual?
Yeah.
How do you feel about it? There's a lot of stigma around bisexuality.
Or asexuality.
And some of that, and the thing is, some of that is dependent on the generation. You have a generation that's been calling themselves bisexual and hasn't had to deal with some of the stigma or exclusion that some older people who are bisexual have had to deal with.
Right.
And that, so their experience with that word is different.
Right.
So it's important to have those conversations. And then when we start going into trans people, well, what does it mean for you as a woman to have a trans woman come into the restroom?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? And it's important to be honest in these conversations,
right?
Because if we don't have the honesty, you have the possibility of really hurting somebody, and that's the one thing that we do not want to do in church is to harm people,
right? But you know, you've got these churches out in, you know, in the middle of nowhere, say Montana, Kentucky, whatever, you know, and they're not necessarily, you know, they're not necessarily thinking about these issues because it's not happening to them. If you know what I mean, it's just not in their face or present.
Right, right. Well, you know, a few years ago, I was working on some writing, and I had contacted many churches throughout the country as to the status of their welcome. What does it mean for their church to be a welcoming congregation? I find it troubling that in some ways that, you know, you have some denominations that when you go to their website, they list congregations that are affirming or open and affirming or welcoming, whatever, reconciling, whatever their particular denomination calls it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm speaking specifically about queer people now. And I came across one church. It was a very small church in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And the pastor asked me to not mention the name because apparently there has been some issue between what that church is doing and in regards to their denomination. Right. They are a lay-led church, meaning that the people of the church lead their denomination, their church services. Mm-hmm. They do have a pastor come and kind of guide them.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the pastor who was talking to me, you know, and he said, but what this church does is that they have so much work that is being done around, rights for lesbians to make sure that they're getting proper gynecological care, rights for transgender people. They put money mm-hmm. together to do a commercial on their local cable network mm-hmm, mm-hmm. about what Transgender Day of Remembrance is.
Right.
And so this little church that doesn't mm-hmm. have a lot of people that's in somewhere in Arizona is doing a tremendous amount of work.
That's cool.
And they're very open.
Right.
But they don't have a lot of queer people in there, but they really think that it's important.
That's really cool.
So, but because they have not gone through a formalized program of whatever they call accreditation or, a process of becoming a formal, open and affirming church, they're not listed. So how is anybody ever going to know that that church exists?
Right, unless they are able to list something on their website.
Right. But the problem I find also on that site is that if you have a denomination that comes out in favor of queer rights and is working progressively towards that, you go to the website and you start seeing churches that are open and affirming or welcoming, whatever, and then you have churches that aren't. Well, what are those? So then those churches that aren't must be bad.
Well, for the sake of the audience, what is the difference between like opening and affirming, reconciling? What are those designations? What do they mean?
Well, Jana, there's not too much difference in practice. I mean, basically, if church comes out as reconciling or open and affirming or welcoming, it just means that they've gone through some sort of a formal training, some formal work around being open to queer people. Mm-hmm. Now, like I know for Unitarians, there's they actually sit and go through specific training around trans people. What does it mean to be trans? What does it mean to be lesbians and gays? And how does this really fit into the congregation?
Right.
And what can we do around this? And how can we deal with our stuff around this? Mm-hmm. And while I think that that's really good, I mean, these things have been going around. Unitarians started it around in the early 90s when Colorado had the Amendment 2. Going around, mm-hmm. which was that horrible amendment, which basically made queer people obsolete.
Right,
they gave them no rights.
Yeah.
UU's been doing work around that. UCC has been doing work about gay rights, gay men and lesbians since the 70s.
Right.
This has been with a lot of work, a lot of thought has gone into this. The problem I have with this is that if your congregation becomes an open and affirming church this year or a welcoming church this year,
right.
5 years down the road, you have a new minister, you have new people coming in. And is your church, do you still have that kind of open and affirming value? Is that still there? Mm-hmm. And I think we're remiss by not revisiting that. And my feeling really is that if you become a reconciling church or a open and affirming or welcoming, that I think it's kind of, should be kind of mandatory that you have to like resubscribe to that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, having that period of time to discern, like, what do we really mean? And it seems like a lot of this kind of thing comes back to, do you individually, do you as a group really mean what you say when you say you are a welcoming congregation, open and affirming, that everybody's welcome, that everybody, whoever you are, is welcome? I mean, is that whoever you are if you're queer? Whoever you are if you practice other religions? Whoever you are if you're in a polyamorous relationship? Whoever you are if you... I don't know. Are purple polka dotted, you know?
Really? I've seen a few of those in church.
Yeah, I mean...
Go to church in San Francisco, why not?
Right. So, yeah.
I think it's important to look at that even more than just, you know, around the issue of being queer. It's like you said, how comfortable are you with having others, as they talk about in the Bible, the foreigner, the alien come into your church? Can you embrace them? If a homeless person comes into church for the first time and is suddenly sits down in the pew next to you where your friend normally sits, are you going to embrace that person? Are you going to welcome them into your church? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to put off this vibe that you're sitting where my friend usually sits?
Right. Or, oh my God, you're stinky. Or,
yeah.
Oh, you're dirty.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's the place that we have to go. And that's a real human thing.
Yeah. Well, this also intersects with things like race, you know?
Uh-huh.
Huge, big time, especially in some areas of the country where, race race is a huge issue all over the U.S., but in some areas of the country, it's even more so.
Yes.
And, you know, so this kind of welcoming, it's not just limited to queer people.
No, it's not. I think it's to all people. And it's about looking inward. Mm-hmm. It's about doing the, I've heard the term sacred activism, which means really doing the heart work around your church work.
Right.
Yeah, around your polity, around, you know, who are you going to put your hand out to? How much are you going to extend your hand out? And I think it's really important for churches when they do this revisioning work, or as they become, you know, an emergent church, a new church, as they flower into a new church, to be really honest about where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to say, oh, yes, we're LGBT inclusive, but really when if you sit and talk to people that maybe they're not so sure about trans people, they don't really know anything about gender variant people.
Right.
You know, and that's why I think you have programs, you know, like OWL, which was done between the UUA and the UCC, which is an incredible program.
Yeah, I've heard that's really good.
Our whole lives, which, you know, they teach it to high school students, and I believe it's even younger.
There's an adult version of it, too.
And there is an adult version, yes.
Yeah.
And there's some really good work that's done in there, and that is important education, because if you can give people things to work with, they can get some traction into how they want to be inclusive. Mm-hmm. It gives them more choices. They can start to rethink some of the ways that they've been thinking about queer people or people who are, you know, emotionally disturbed, you know. You know, maybe somebody had a parent who was disturbed, and it really brings up their stuff and around that, you know. And so is there pastoral help for that?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that, you know, in the work of pastoring, we do need the training on, because we don't really think about it all the time. You know, like, I know I made a conscious decision about the Eucharist in my church that I would have an alternative for those who have eating disorders or have a fear of food or something like that, because that's a big point of activism for me. And, you know, I don't think, you know, and some people may just brush it off as, oh, that's a California thing. But, you know, I think it, you know, being honest about it and being open about, okay, this is what we do, this is who we are, this is how we feel about this, that, the other, being completely clear about what we do and why we do it, you know, will bring more people in, because they'll be like, oh, hey, that's pretty cool. You know, they're thinking about me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I really believe it's the job of the church to empower people.
Right.
And when we can do things like that, it really, it's profound, the changes that you see in people. I know I've worked services mm-hmm. where we've done a tri ritual, where we've had communion and maybe an anointing and an Indian feather blessing.
Right.
And you'll see people out in the congregation, they don't know what to do, because now their friend suddenly gets up and goes for communion. They're like, you do communion? I never do. And all of a sudden, you know, they find themselves sitting there and so maybe they'll go up and do the feather blessing.
Right.
And then the next thing you know, they're like, wow, maybe I'll go be anointed, you know. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so it gives them agency
right.
to be able to go and to, you know, try different things and see how that feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it always, I know, I always get really good feedback, like, wow, I'm really glad you did that. You know, like, I'm really glad that you anointed me and made me feel like my body was worthy.
It's about being seen.
Right.
And that's the whole thing around that I really believe is one of the critical points around the emergent church. It's about how can we really see the people who come to us. It's about creating right. a church where not only we're all blessed, but we're seen by each other.
Right.
And that's, you know, having a ritual that's inclusive like that, that gives people mm-hmm. more options is a perfect way to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of being seen, it's like, okay, so how do we get seen? I know for me, I know I'm doing online stuff, and a lot of the other emerging churches that I've seen are doing online stuff. However, one of the biggest problems is the money factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing. You know, when you start emerging churches, you're starting from scratch. You're starting from nothing.
Right.
No money, just a vision and a dream.
Right.
And, you know, for my particular church, you know, I'm lucky to have the space that I have and for the arrangement that I do have.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of people, you know, they're paying out of pocket. You know, they're working 1, 2, 3, 4 jobs other than pastoring.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot.
Right.
And, you know, they don't get paid for the work that they do.
Right.
And, you know, all the other denominations, they're starting to move away from paying their pastors too.
Right.
So
you have quarter-time ministers and
yeah.
full-time ministry is
gone.
Pretty much. Yeah.
You know, unless you're a Catholic priest, more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Or an Orthodox priest, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, that brings up a really good point. How do we do this? And like for myself, for the church that I'm looking to set up, I really had a vision for it, but I understood that, you know, that it comes to money. And so I've started working with another pastor who has a church already started, and I'm going to start working with them.
Right.
And I'm going to start, you know, getting myself out there some more, doing some more work around getting the vision out.
Right.
And then from there, I'm going to see about how I can spin my church out of this pastor's church. Is that's what he was talking about?
Yeah.
And and I think that that's possible. It's been done.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you know, like I was saying before, how do we survive as a community of communities? Well, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of communities in our community that are already doing the work or doing various types of work. And if I have a vision and say your church has a vision and another church has the same vision, well, maybe we can create something together. Mm-hmm. I only have a few pennies to put in. You only have a few pennies to put in. And the other church only has a few pennies. We each have a person who wants to do this. Mm-hmm. So that's three people who, you know, want to do this ministry.
Right.
So let's do it together.
Yeah. You know,
again, it's about proprietorship. There is no I in the word church.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so if it's about creating a community where all are welcome wherever they are.
Yeah. And I think you're right. It's just sometimes I know for some people it's hard to not really think of the normal way that church is done. You know, you are a pastor of a church and you know, you are the sole pastor of the church. And I know like some church plants, you know, it's one person who wants to be the whole thing.
Well, then that's not church. Mm-hmm. that's whatever. That's not the church that that I really think God has intended to have here. I think God really intends for us to be working more collectively, mm-hmm. and collaboratively,
yeah.
A shared ministry.
Yeah.
Because God is not a stagnant pond. God's just not going to live in your church. God lives mm-hmm. in all the churches and temples and mosques and everything. It's, you got to remember, it's not just the churches.
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to be, you know, do a multi-faith thing, you've got to get other people involved in this.
Right.
But, and to have the real hard conversations around that too.
Yeah, and you know, and even in congregations that are one particular tradition, like say a Christian congregation or a Jewish congregation, you know, acknowledging that people have differences and are doing different things with their spirituality and not just whatever that particular tradition is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know from my own experience, you know, there are a lot of people that have come out of the woodwork when I say, hey, I'm Wiccan Christian. They're like, oh, you can be both.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I'm this and that. I'm this and Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, I had no idea.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm Jewish, Christian, Buddhist.
Right.
You
right.
know, and so I draw on all of that when I do worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And I think that I know a lot of other people who have been in on different paths. And I think that that's the interesting part of the emergent church.
Mm-hmm.
If we try to keep church as usual, a church that's been done,
right.
it's going to die.
Yeah.
You know, but if we start talking with people about how we can be a church, you know, for the people, by the people,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot, you know, you might be more successful. Well, what does worship look like for you? If
right.
you're a person who tends to be more of the traditional service, you like all the, if you're Episcopalian and you like all the smells and bells mm-hmm. and the incense and all that stuff, you know, how can we work that in a modern type of a service where you can have what you mm-hmm. need and other people that we can have what they need.
Right.
And it's about really thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And really being open to that.
Right.
And that's why I think it's so great what's starting to happen, that you have people like Marsha McPhee,
right.
who's out there doing a lot of work with worship design
right.
and creating new types of worship. You have, like at my school, you had Reverend Michelle Favreau. She really is also teaching that sort of thing. You have a new professor at the Pacific School of Religion who's doing the same thing, Sharon Fenema.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Really getting new ministers to think about church and worship differently.
Right.
And to draw on from what you have to be able to do something different.
Right. And also, you know, I think I know PSR has done a lot of work around this and they're restructuring their curriculum and to reflect these things. But it's also how to bring older congregations, established congregations who have a certain way of doing things, you know, how to incorporate some of this newer stuff so that it doesn't alienate your older, more traditional congregants and yet still bring in the 21st century.
Right. Right.
And I think that's one of the harder things to do, because you can't just say, we are going to do this now. And that's it. You know, we're going to suddenly have a projector in our thing, or we're suddenly going to use Twitter to ask questions. It's like, you kind of have to meet. And I know this, I kind of sound like a broken record on this podcast about this, but you know, you do have to meet people where they're at.
Exactly. And I think that that's really important, and not just meeting, but personally acknowledging them.
Right.
You know, I'm all for, you know, how do we see our people? I mean, really see them in our congregations. How do we really meet each individual? We have to remember that our congregations are made up of congregants. They're made up of individuals.
Yeah.
And everybody's got their stuff about that. So how do we get that information into like your worship and arts committee to, well, this is what the congregation wants. So how are we going to do that? And does that require a pastor? Yes, it requires a pastor to actually sift through that information, you know,
and to really acknowledge, like, you know, what people have learned as a child and, you know, growing up, you know, that doesn't go away overnight. So, you know, if you're trying to bring in something completely new from a different tradition, you might have a lot of fear there.
Exactly.
That people are like, oh my God, you know, you're bringing in the devil. Holy crap. You
know? Right. I mean, I was talking with somebody a few weeks ago who told me that they really have an issue with paganism in the church, and that they really wanted their church to be totally Christian.
Right.
And, you know, and this church is in a lot of discernment around that. And, you know, my feeling about it is, well, you know, if you have these conversations and you decide that that's what you want is to be a completely Christian church, then fine.
Yeah.
Then that's what it is. Make sure people know about it. You know, not that it's a bad thing, but this, we are a Christian church.
Yeah. You know, advertise what's, you know, what's
say what you are.
Be clear about it.
Be clear about it. Yeah. You know, and so then you might have some other people. We might be able to trade off some people, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you have the traditional service at your church and I don't. I have people running around with guitars and sitting on couches and, you know, watching whatever, you know.
Yeah, playing with ribbons.
Yeah, whatever. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think that's a big thing, too. And, you know, Sarah and I talked about metafaith on the first episode. You know, and I think one of the big things is people realizing that, you know, having differences is okay. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you don't have to, it goes both ways. You know, you can acknowledge the differences and say, okay, but this is what we're going to be, and be very clear about that. Or you can say, hey, let's bring all these differences in and let's have some fun, you know, or let's do something different. But, you know, I think being clear about what's going on will help.
Yes.
With the people who come, because then they're not like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Exactly. Like, I remember I was talking with somebody who had gone to a service that I was doing. And for around communion time, I had the tri-ritual, I had communion, I had anointing, and I had intercessory prayer. I had somebody there to pray. And the way I described it is that if you don't know what intercessory prayer is, it's when you have somebody pray for you, which is sometimes really nice when you're all stressed out and you've got something heavy in your heart to have somebody put those words together, you know. And this person had never done that before.
Right.
And they had just experienced a loss. And then they went up for this intercessory prayer and they were like, it was just such an incredible feeling. She, you know, she cried a little bit and she just felt so healed in a way, you know. And that's what you want to try to get people to do, is to try to give them an area to, a way to experience and explore different things around spirituality and religion and what is this God thing, this mystery that we're talking about?
Right.
I mean, I thought, I used to think intercessory prayer used to scare me to death.
Right, right.
I would not go.
I remember you telling me about
that. I saw somebody get bopped in the head and start frothing at the mouth, and I ran out of the church thinking, these people are weird. I don't want anything to do with them, you know?
Right.
But, you know, that's, then I had to, when I went to another church where it was really explained to me what was happening. And I think that that's important is, you know, if people, if you take the time to explain to people what's going on and why it's happening and what it can do, people might be more prone to try it. And
And I also think being accessible for those questions. I know I'm trying to make myself as accessible as possible, although I do most of it through the internet.
That's right. And that's why I think, you know, especially with the emergent church, and we think of emergent churches just new churches, which it is.
To some extent,
to some extent. But it's also you have a lot of churches that are in trouble that are starting to revision.
Right.
So I think that that really needs to be handled well, you know, and to really present the options well. Because sometimes you deal with congregations that are very scared and very reticent to move forward into another direction.
Right.
So to have those things explained and to really take time, you know, to listen and to hear what people's concerns are around that. Like, intercessory prayer scares me. You know, that's important. I also think that it's important in this process as we start to make these changes that the people who are doing worship and arts be open to hearing things from people in the congregation as we make these changes, what's working and what's not.
Yeah.
And the pastor needs to hear this too. And
it's absolutely
not a critical thing that this is bad, you're doing this, but you know, how can we serve you better? How can we feed you? You know, and that's really what we're trying to create. And I think if we can start thinking, restructuring our thinking around this, reframing our thinking around emergent church and start thinking of as revisioning and dreaming again. It's like, let's dream again as a church.
Yeah.
Let's dream of an inclusive community where all are welcome, where we don't have to spend time thinking about in church meetings about who's there and who's not, where we're just out doing the work of a God-driven community, that is really what we're pushing for, you know? Yeah. And so what we do in communion and what we do in worship and communion and music is all important. Mm-hmm. So to be able to say, you know, I like this music, but I'd kind of like to have a little bit more of this. So maybe once a week, once a month, we'll throw in something else, or we'll do something a little different. We'll change it up a little.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And, you know, I wish we had a little more time today. We're running out of time. But, you know, we can definitely revisit this topic sometime.
Oh, definitely.
Later,
this topic is going to be happening for a while.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So, Reverend Lee, how can people get in touch with you? Do you have a blog, all that stuff?
I have a blog, Coffee with God. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be restarted again soon.
Excellent.
And you can also contact me by email at Reverend Rev.Lee, Whitaker@gmail.com.
All right. And we'll have all that in the show notes as well. And a link to your website and all that. And so that's pretty much it. And thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's been great. It's wonderful. I love to talk about this topic.
Well, we're going
to
have you come back again, and we'll talk more about the emerging church and some other issues that we have on the burner. So,
excellent.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
I'd like to thank Reverend Lee for joining us this week. And if you'd like to subscribe to this podcast or look at the show notes, go to www.thisweekinheresy.com. and you'll find all that information there. And I'd like to announce that we are now on the Stitcher app. So if you just look up thisweekinheresy.com on Stitcher, you'll find us. Have a great week. Bye-bye.